Hello. I want to welcome you to another lesson in the Lead Yourself First program. My name is Tom Cooper, and today we are talking about a tool that you can use to multiply your effectiveness. Now, as I record this, it's getting to be the end of the year, and people often are thinking about a lot of things other than changes and implementing effectiveness. But I want to challenge you in our conversation today to be thinking about a tool you can use that'll speed up your learning, that's going to help you deliver better results and deliver results faster. Today, what we're talking about is the discipline of reflection. Lead Yourself First is your personal growth program. My mentor, John Maxwell, says, contrary to what Julius Caesar said, experience is not the best teacher. Experience is not the best teacher. Evaluated experience is the best teacher. And today, we're talking about how to make sure that you do evaluate your experiences. Lead Yourself First is your system to help you develop the leadership skills that are going to help you. And I want to encourage you to put these ideas into practice. And this idea, even though it doesn't immediately leap out as being a component of massive achievement, it really is. It's a proven tool that can lift you up and raise your results. And as we're preparing to jump in, I'm going to challenge you, as I always do, to think about what's something you can apply, change, or teach. How will you act at the end of our session? What's something you can apply, change, or teach? And you want to be a river, not a reservoir. You want to pass things along as you're learning them. Don't wait till you've got it all figured out to teach. Teach as you go. And teaching can mean just sharing with somebody standing next to you. Take an idea from our conversation today and share it with somebody. I've been looking forward to today's lesson. I look forward to this lesson because even though I know this message is countercultural, it's an unusual message. It's shocking, but it's a secret weapon in increasing your effectiveness. It's a simple way for you to get more out of every single day. In the next few minutes, we're going to be digging into some ideas about reflection and how reflection can help us grow. And I want to encourage you to take action, because even small steps add up. Now, you might want to go deeper. You might want to do more. You might want accountability about putting ideas into practice. And at the end of the lesson, I promise I'm going to share with you a way that you can do that. Fair enough? Well, today's lesson, we're introducing one of John Maxwell's 15 invaluable laws of growth from his book of the same title. And the topic is reflection. But what's wrong with reflection? Well, reflection is uncommon. We're busy. We're distracted. We're overwhelmed with activities. Now, I remember a long time ago, when 1981, when MTV launched, and yes, I am that old. It was revolutionary. The idea that we could take musical expression to a whole new level by adding a video story to songs, and that we could make that expression a mainstream thing, that was transformative. And I even remember 25 years later, in 2006, and for most TV channels, a 25th anniversary, that's a big deal. Maintaining the user base, the viewers, and the programming, and staying relevant, it's a challenge for every media producer. And it was a challenge for them, too. Making it 25 years is a milestone. It shows that you've been able to persevere and grow and adapt and learn over time to stay relevant. And many people anticipated a big production or a big celebration of the day of the 25th anniversary. But surprisingly, the MTV Music Group chief, Van Toffler, remarked, "We are not a reflective organization." In an article about it, USA Today commented, "Most of the channel's viewers weren't even alive when it launched, and for them, a reminder of its age might be a turnoff." And I would argue, even this many years later, that Toffler's comment is bigger than MTV. I think it's a description of the way our culture approaches looking back. I mean, who has time for that? We're busy, we're overscheduled, we're always behind, we always need to catch up. And we need to focus more and work harder. Our culture prides itself on being busy. Busy is normal. Busy is expected. Overwhelmed is normal. We're living on fast forward. Who in the world has time to slow down? But let me ask you this. How are you measuring your success? Is it about how many tasks you can get done? about the projects you complete, the amount of money you earn. I follow a finance and sales influencer by the name of Ramit Sethi, and he says he's all about creating a rich life, and his definition of a rich life has little to do with money and more to do with the pursuit of things that enrich his daily experiences. Now, years ago, I was a manager in a large organization, and I would encourage my team members to consider their goals for professional development and their growth. I challenged them and encouraged them to come up with some ideas, and I committed to helping them achieve those goals. And one significantly important component of our success is our ability to learn. By taking time, as John Maxwell says, to evaluate our experience. And when I was a team member in my corporate career, I remember believing that I was hired to solve hard problems. So I tended to think it was my job to work hard on solving problems. But over and over again, I ran into the same trouble. Different managers, different bosses that I reported to told me they felt I was not productive enough. And I couldn't understand, how could you feel that way? I was busy. I was solving hard problems, and it kept happening again and again. I wanted to be seen as a star performer, but I kept being called out as a mediocre performer. And what was really upsetting was I knew I worked harder than a lot of people around me. I was committed to results, and I was delivering results. And it was a slap in the face when my boss said to me one day, "Tom, I don't get it, and my boss doesn't get it. Why do you waste so much time on work that is really unimportant?" I couldn't believe it. Have you ever been in a situation where you've been misunderstood, where you've been wrongly judged for what you've thought, what you've done? It hurts, doesn't it? Sure hurt me. It's challenging and frustrating. And until I could figure out why this was happening, it was going to keep happening. And that's the reality. And how in the world could I figure out why it was happening? Well, that was a problem that could only be solved through reflection. Now, my pride, and that's the hardest place to hit me, is in my pride. My pride did not like me being seen as a poor performer. And I did have a big lesson to learn. And we'll come back at the end of the lesson today to talk about what I learned. A management guru, Peter Drucker, said, "Follow effective action with quiet reflection. From the quiet reflection will come even more effective action." Follow effective action with quiet reflection. From the quiet reflection will come even more effective action. I think Drucker is exactly right. We must make time to reflect in order to be maximally effective. We want to be the most effective we can possibly be, because reflection is, it's the essential requirement to being able to evaluate our experiences. John Maxwell says, "Reflection turns experience into insight. How in the world can I ever experience any insights unless I reflect on the journey that led me to the place where multiple bosses thought I was an average or low performer? But I was so busy. How could I possibly make time to reflect?" You see, I was operating under an assumption, and my assumption was that being busy and working hard was the way to be effective. But it wasn't working out for me. And I didn't know what to do, right? I was interested in growing, and I learned that growth required thinking about growing. And it was from my reading and my attending conferences as a part of my personal growth plan that I came across a quote that says, "If you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month." It wasn't until I began to reflect, to think carefully about what it was that was contributing to my situation. What was it? I mean, was it that I had stupid bosses? Was it that I was lying to myself? What if I was actually a low performer who was simply confused about what it meant to work hard? Years ago, I started a business as a coach and a speaker, and I paid for access to some of the best training on public speaking that I could find. I got acquainted with a master of public speaking, an incredible trainer and brilliant mentor named Roddy Galbraith. One of the lessons that Roddy taught me was linked to something Jim Rohn said. Jim Rohn said, "At the end of each day, you should play back the tape of your performance. The results should either applaud you or prod you. Roddy said, if I would write out my speech, then practice my speech, I'd get better. Duh. But he also gave me a specific tip on how to reflect on my speech that was overwhelmingly powerful for me. In fact, it's one I need to implement even today. Roddy taught that I should record myself as I practice my speech, and that after I practice it, I ought to watch the recording and make notes of ways to improve. He also said that using those insights, I should re-record my speech and then watch that time and make notes again. This process, my mentor Roddy recommends, ought to be repeated 10 times. 10 times? Are you kidding me? But that process of repeated reflection prodded me to be a better speaker. So for you, what do you want to be better at? What do you need to improve? Things do not improve by accident. They simply don't. It's a law of the universe that things go from more organized to less organized. That is the nature of things. So what do you want to get better at? And you need to know that you won't get better unless you're learning. Now, people often say practice makes perfect, and that is simply untrue. Perfect practice helps us get better, but who practices perfectly? The key is we need to reflect on how to improve so that we can actually get better. I think it's practice with reflection that leads to progress. And how do we reflect? What can we do that leads to better performance? What can help us learn how to reflect? It's asking questions. We need to be thinking about asking questions that help us reflect on our experiences. And John gives several sample questions to help with that. What is my biggest asset? What's the biggest thing I have going for me? What is my biggest liability? What is my highest high in life? What was my lowest low? What's my most worthwhile emotion? And what's my least worthwhile emotion? I like the questions that John offers about valuing people. He asks, do I value people? Do people know I value them? How do I show that I value people? And this one's crushing. What evidence do I have to confirm my opinion about what I'm doing? These are questions worthy of spending time thinking about. Do you have a time and a place to think? My guess is if you're like me, you're too busy to have that. But what if you did? And I'm not talking about setting aside a two-hour thinking session. What if you could start small? What if you spent 2 minutes at the end of your day asking some questions like this? What was my best moment today? Which moment today would I like a do-over? And why? And based on what happened today, what can I do tomorrow so that my reflection time tomorrow is better than today? And I love what John says on this. He says, if all this sounds like a lot of trouble, you're right. That is why most people will never do it. So how did I move from being a low performer to being a key contributor? What did I learn about my work that led to my problems? Well, I started asking myself some tough questions. Questions like, why does my boss think I'm a low performer? I mean, could it be that my bosses were just foolish? That might be true if it happened one time, but this happened to me more than one time. And what if it was true that the person most responsible for my troubles was me? What part had I played in my problem? What measurements were I using to determine whether I was successful or not? Had I been lying to myself about what hard work means? If there was a disconnect between my boss's opinion and my opinion, how could it be that it had lasted as long as it did? How could it have been that persistent? As I looked at myself, I began to realize there were a number of things that led to this problem. And indeed, I was the person most responsible, darn it. Let me tell you one of the things I did wrong. I didn't ask for enough help. I told you, I thought my job was to solve hard problems, that my job was to figure it out, that my job was to understand the problem and then do whatever it took to solve it. Back in the day, I was responsible for a system that delivered software to the reservation centers at the hotel chain. If the system didn't perform, people couldn't book hotel rooms. That was really important to the business. Now, the company I worked for hadn't staffed my team with enough people to be able to do amazing work. But I felt a commitment personally to doing delivery, and I focused my attention on doing whatever it took to get the job done with the team I had available. Unfortunately, the tool we were using was not the most reliable tool set in the world. And that meant that sometimes the system would crash in the middle of a deployment. And the deployments happened when the reservation centers were closed and the reservation centers were all over the world. And that meant that often deployments would fail in the middle of the night. And I knew that the inability to book a hotel room was a big deal. And so I made it a point to personally monitor all of the deployments. And when one failed, I would leap into immediate action to restart the deployment so that it would be successful in time for the center to reopen. And it worked. As far as the business people were concerned, the system was great. It consistently delivered what we promised. And I had complained to my boss about the fact that the 24/7 operations team was not skilled enough to solve it without my help. I didn't actually ask for help. And so what happened was, at least once a month, I'd pull an all-nighter to make sure the system was working. But I didn't tell my boss that. And moreover, my boss didn't even realize that I needed to work a full-time job just to maintain this system. So he assigned other projects to me. And this project was directly linked to revenue. And I felt it was a higher priority than every other project on my to-do list. And when I needed to make a decision about which project to work on and which project not to work on, I chose the one that was best for the business. But I never talked to my boss about any of this stuff. My boss hired me to solve hard problems. They hired me because I had good judgment, and I was using my judgment to do what was best. So why in the world should I ask them for help? And I was proud. I mean, why would I ask for help? Wasn't that just admitting that I wasn't good enough to do the job? Looking back, I really believe I could have solved a lot of my troubles if I had been willing to ask for help, if I had been willing to share the struggle and show the difficulty. And I later learned that when I know about a problem, but nobody else knows about that problem, that's my problem. But when I work with others to have them walk through the problem with me, it becomes our problem. Now, that's so important. I want to say it one more time, that when I know about a problem, but nobody else knows about it, that's my problem. But when I work with others to have them walk through the problem with me, it goes from being my problem to being our problem. As I look back on this season of my career, I realize that my monthly all-nighter heroic effort was needlessly self-sacrificial. The business folks who loved that system didn't understand how fragile it was. They thought it just worked. And as a result, in their minds, there were no problems that needed to be fixed. And since there were no problems that needed to be fixed, there was no need to put any more time, money, or people into that system. I wish I had talked to my boss about the challenges I was facing. I should have had him step in and offer ideas and suggestions. I should have had others with me in the trenches to try to figure out what was going wrong. My pride prevented me from doing that, and ultimately, my pride set me up for failure. Until I began to reflect on where things were going off track, I couldn't see how I contributed to my troubles. And until I understood that, I couldn't make any changes. And that is the power of reflection. So we're coming to the end of our lesson, and I just want to review a couple of the points from today's lesson. First, reflection is linked to learning. Learning allows us to make those course corrections we need to make that are going to lead us to greater achievement. We know that people who commit to a regular practice of reflecting come up with insights that lead to better results and better performance. So how do we do it? We start small. We went add a brief reflection time to your routine. You can begin to get the insights you need. And I'm telling you, 2 minutes, just 2 minutes at the start or the end of your day can help you learn and grow. Take 1 minute to reflect on what worked and what didn't work. And then take 1 minute to plan on what's the most important thing you need to work on today. If you'll literally take 2 minutes to do that, it will transform your effectiveness. You will be able to be laser focused on the important stuff instead of being distracted. And if you commit to doing reflection, here's some questions you can ask. What was my best moment today? What moment would I like to do over? And why? What can I do tomorrow so that my reflection time tomorrow is better? So from our lesson today, how are you going to act? What can you apply, change, or teach? And maybe you're with your team and you're not doing enough reflection as a group. After the end of this call, take a few minutes to talk to the team about what we covered today. What are you already doing? How could you get better at reflection? Now, maybe you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, that'd be really great. I could use some help with that. Well, what if you had a time with a coach to focus on your growth? I've got a 6-session coaching program based on John Maxwell's best-selling book, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, and we've only scratched the surface on one of them. But there's more. There are 14 others we haven't even looked at. And what if you chose to invest in yourself and make a specific plan? This is so valuable and so useful that the cost for this 6-session coaching program is only $199. And you'll see results because you're going to be accountable to do the work. And not only that, but you're going to have practical ideas that you can immediately use to become the person who can achieve even better results. If it sounds interesting, drop me a line, tom@brighthillgroup.com, tom@brighthillgroup.com, and we'll get it set up. Thank you for being here for today's Lead Yourself First lesson, and I look forward to hearing from you next time.